hands were friends, and company was right. We'd drink and talk and sing all through the night. And morning came leisurely and bright. Downtown we'd walk, and passers-by would shudder with delight. Good times. It is his man.
Hey guys, it's episode 607 of All Time Top 10. We hope you guys enjoyed last week's emergency pod episode we did with our friend Joel Lavelle. Isn't it nice to have a part one episode with an odd number attached to it? We fixed it, everyone. As Neil Diamond said, we set the world right, and you're welcome. Now that we're back on the right track, it's a real treat to welcome the great Jason Burke back to the pod. Jason was kind enough to join us for a look at some origin stories in top 10 autobiographical songs. It's a pretty self-explanatory topic, but suffice it to say there are great bands and artists singing about themselves and who they are. So coming up in part one, picks 10 through 6. So we'll get to that in just a moment. Folks, Patreon is back. It's the cat's out of the bag. Patreon is back. All Time Top 10 brings you a bonus episode every month featuring our favorite guests doing their version of Emergency Pod, the one you just heard. We're going to have everybody on doing that. $5 a month gets you in. And thanks and big shout out to some of those who have signed up, in particular Ms. Shannon Hurley, our friend Ari, and our friend Dave Meyer. Thank you guys for jumping back in with us. Go to patreon.com/alltimetop10 to join them. We also have our Facebook group, the ATTT chat, is up and running, and we love chatting about all things music over there. Anybody can join, anybody can post about anything music there. You can do polls. Come on, people, join us over at the Facebook group when we're there on Facebook. Also there on social media, you guys have been helping us out with some fun with our polls, you know, voting for the bonus track of the week, and in more polls in service of the grand release of three more songs, the unveiling of three more songs in the Mega Countdown, the ATTT 1000, aka the 1000 greatest songs we've ever heard. Three more this week, including number 646. Let me just say up front, this is insane how much we're getting responses from you guys. Thank you so much. I can't even come close to listing all these ones that we had. These are like 200 different selections, 300 in some cases. The response has been overwhelming, and we can't thank you guys enough. This is a lot of fun, too. At number 646, it's Bruce Springsteen with Highway Patrolman. I was asking you guys, who is the best rock and roll storyteller? Good suggestions here. Nick Cave, Joni Mitchell, Leonard Cohen, Tom Waits, Bob Dylan, Jim Croce, Jackson Brown, Warren Zevon, John Prine, Randy Newman, Paul Simon, John Hyatt, Paul Westerberg, Jim Steinman, Neil Young, Lou Reed, Morrissey, and Paul Kelly, and a lot more, so many more. Thank you, guys. But we love Bruce, of course, from the album Nebraska. It is Highway Patrolman at number 646. Our friend Brian says, one of his absolute greatest songs, Nebraska is my favorite album from Bruce. Mitchell says, man turns his back on his family. Well, he just ain't no good. That's right, it's Highway Patrolman. At number 645, it's Tracy Chapman with Fast Car. I was asking you guys, what's the best song about hard times? Good suggestions here, and like hundreds of them. Inner City Blues, Common People by Pulp and William Shatner, Arrested Development with Mr. Wendell, Hard Times by Baby Huey and by John Legend, Torture Never Stops by Frank Zappa, Albert King, Born Under a Bad Sign, The Kinks with Dead End Street, Maudlin Street by Morrissey, Stephen Foster, Hard Times Come Again, No More, and so many more. We love Fast Car, though. Has to be included. Bill says, so glad it made the list. Brian says, great song. He wants me to mention the cover of Fast Car by the Black Pumas. Adam told an extensive story on the first time he heard it. Please go to the All Time Top 10 Facebook page to read that. David says, fast car. She's not just talking about hard times or complaining about them. She's telling you what causes them and what it feels like to go through them. Has Tracy Chapman ever said what she believes happened to the narrator in the song? I'd love to know. But our favorite smartass, Dan Ewan, says, quote, driving fast with one arm around a passenger's shoulder is very dangerous. 0 stars. Thank you, Dan. But yeah, of course, we love Fast Car. Shout out to Luke Combs again. One more here, number 644. It's Tom Petty with Wildflowers. I was asking you guys what's the best Wild song. Hundreds of responses. Great ones here too. Wild Night, Wild World, Walk on the Wild Side, Wild as the Wind, Don't Run Wild by the Del Fuegos, Animal Wild by Victoria Williams, Wild in the Streets, Wild Grass by Van Walker, Queen, Ride the Wild Wind, Where the Wild Roses Grow by Nick Cave, Born to Be Wild, Wild Thing, Wild Horses, Your Wildest Dreams by the Moody Blues, The Talking Heads with Wild Wild Life, Wild Side by Motley Crue, Oscillate Wildly by The Smiths, and Wild Boys by Duran Duran. But we love Wildflowers, and our friend Mark, Mark Kofer on Instagram, says that album has aged so well. And yeah, it's just timeless music from Tom Petty. Wildflowers, number 644 now. Those three songs are now added to the playlists that keep growing. They're available at Spotify and YouTube. Follow along as we add more and more each week. Thanks so much, everybody. Let's get into this episode. Let's talk to Jason. Let's talk about our favorite autobiographical songs. Part one up now. Roll the tape.
Even if he did suffer, that was like 40 years ago. What have you done for me lately? I've been suffering for the past 30 years, up to and including yesterday.
You know, if this tenant board is so impressed with suffering, maybe you should tell them the astonishing tales of Costanza.
I should.
I mean, your body of work in this field is unparalleled.
I could go bummer to bummer with anyone on this planet.
I was handcuffed to the bed in my underwear. Where I remained, for she certainly seemed interested in me. Though she was attractive, she was also, in fact, a Nazi. The water that I had been swimming in was very cold. And when I dropped the towel, there had been significant shrinkage. My parents were looking at me. So there I was, with a marble rye hanging from the end of a fishing pole. In closing, these stories have not been embellished because they need no embellishment. They are simply, horrifyingly, the story of my life as a short, stocky, slow-witted, bald man. Thank you. Oh, also, my fiancé died from licking toxic envelopes that I picked out. Thanks again.
Top 10 Autobiographical Songs, Part 1.
If I close my eyes, I can almost hear my mother calling, Neil, go find your brother. Daddy's home and it's time for supper. Hurry on. And I see two boys racing up two flights of staircase, squirming into Papa's embrace, and his whiskers warm on their face. Where's it gone? Oh, where's it gone? Two floors above the butcher, first door on the right, and life filled to the brim as I stood by my window and looked out on those Brooklyn roads.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another magical episode of All Time Top 10. Yeah. Woo. the guy in the sriracha shirt is clapping. It's really cool. I love that shirt, by the way.
Thanks.
He always has good shirts. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us for the second time on ATTT. Last time we talked about our favorite unconventional crooners, if you recall. If you recall that episode, you'll know the voice of the great Jason Burke. He's here, yeah.
Hello, hello, everybody.
He's back. Welcome back, man. So good to have you back.
Good to be back. You know, that last episode we did really, like, turned me on to Roxy music.
Yeah.
So when we, after we did that and I saw I was like, I got to go to the show. It was an amazing show. And I credit that experience to having been on this show.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, yeah. We played more than this. I'm talking about Brian Ferry as a crooner. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool to hear. I'm happy to hear that. Jason's back to regale us with a topic that came from his brain, as far as I know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
What are we going to talk about this week?
We're going to talk about autobiographical songs, or songs that at least are sort of the mission statement for the band, because plenty of people are writing songs from, you know, their own experience about things that happened in their lives, breakups, you know, things like that. But I wanted something that was really sort of, you know, about how this band formed, or, you know, kind of what this band is about.
Right.
Or, you know, if it's a singer, something that is still just like, here's literally, this is me.
Yeah, this is something that happened to me or to us, you know.
Yeah.
What we went through that made us who we are. And when I first threw this out there on the social media, you noticed that a lot of people were taking liberties with the topic, with the concept, and that's fine. I wrote down everyone's picks. I think we had like 90 something autobiographical songs, 92 songs. And what people ended up doing, and it's totally fine, I'm gonna stick to your ruling, and that it's like sort of like origin stories. A lot of people were just like suggesting songs that featured things that happened.
Here's a coded reference to a thing, or I think some people mentioned like Garden Party.
Right, Garden Party is but also like the Ballad of John and Yoko. You know, that's an autobiographical song. Yes,
yeah.
But it's not like telling you who the artist is. It's just like, this is a thing that happened with John and Yoko. So I avoided those, but we did get quite a few. I'll mention a couple in my honorable mentions at the end, but for the most part, I'm narrowing mine down to what you want. And I think that's a cool thing to do, because it's mission statements and it's origin stories, and that's just fun, you know.
Yeah, it really, and I thought it's, you know, when a band is able to sort of look at itself
right
in that lens and recognize where they came from, and not just say like, we're big and we're famous because we deserve to be big and famous, but to, you know, really be a little bit objective about how things went.
Yeah. And we also want to be specific in that they're telling autobiographical tales. Like, shout out to our friend Dan Rothschild. He suggested It's a Long Way to the Top by AC/DC. And, you know, that's just like things that happened to bands. And I'm sure it happened to them, but they're not making that clear.
It's too general. It's not, this is what we as AC/DC went through specifically.
Right.
It's like, this is just, if you want to be a top rock band, this is probably what you'll experience.
Right. Yeah, I tell you, folks, it's harder than it looks. I love that song so much. Yeah. But yeah, it's not kind of
got to be one of the only that and Mull of Kintyre are probably the only charting hits with bagpipes.
Yeah, would love to find out. Sounds like a list.
Future episode.
Possible. I mean, there's like future episodes hanging from the trees around here. By the way, we're mentioning AC/DC. I want to give friend Bill a shout out, because he says Highway to Hell is an autobiographical song. I don't know if he's sincere or not, but that's hilarious to me. Highway to Hell.
It does sound a little personally inspired, but still isn't literally telling a story. Yeah, just sort of like band, describing the kind of guy I am.
The band didn't actually go to hell. As far as I know, they didn't. Anyway, so let's get into the list. Let's go to number 10. And since it's not your first time on the show, you can go first if you'd like, but it's up to you. You decide who goes first. Number 10.
You go first. You go first this time.
Okay. All right. Strategy, perhaps. So we mentioned that this can fit in with a band, but it also can fit in with a solo artist, right?
Right.
This is sort of Dolly Parton's, it's an origin story. She has a couple of origin story songs. There's, what's the one? Evening Shade, where she sings about the boarding school that she, you know, had go through hell living in.
Right.
You know, and they burned it to the ground and all that. Like, that's a true story, apparently. But to me, the one that says, "This is me," is Coat of Many Colors.
Oh.
Yeah. 1971. This is 53 years ago. She told this story about her childhood and how kind of how it shaped who she became. Here's a little bit from Library of Congress website, loc.gov. Okay, so if you ask Dolly what her favorite song is among her vast catalog, she will unequivocally answer Coat of Many Colors. The reason she gives: the song is a true story from her childhood, and it always brings back loving memories of her mother. Dolly writes songs to keep memories alive, and she points to Coat of Many Colors as one example, saying, quote, "Whenever I sing that, I just see my whole childhood." Songwriting always came easily to Dolly. Her father recalled, quote, "She was writing songs before she knew how to hold a pencil." Her first song, Little Tiny Tassel Top, was about the homemade corn cob doll that she had. From that humble beginning, Dolly has written over 3,000 songs.
Wow.
Yep. Coat of Many Colors is an example of Dolly at her best as a creative storyteller, in which she weaves a painful, true story from her childhood. What happened is this: as a young child, Dolly needed a new coat one winter, so her mother sewed one out of fabric scraps so that Dolly would feel proud of her coat. Her mother told her the Bible story of Joseph and his coat of many colors. Dolly ran off to school proud to show off her new coat, but Dolly's classmates made fun of her, teasing her about her coat of rags. In later interviews about this incident, Dolly revealed a much harsher element to the story. The other children stripped the coat off of her and locked her half naked and screaming in a dark coat closet. She says this is why she always sleeps with the light on now. Crazy. Dolly said she was too ashamed to talk about what happened until she composed the song many years later in 1969, which she says helped her heal her residual hurt and shame. How crazy.
And they made this into a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a TV movie that she's, I mean, it's interesting because sometimes you'll see an artist that like wrote a memoir and then they wrote like two more memoirs and it hasn't been that long. And I'm like, has your life been that interesting in the last like 3 years as everything in the first book? But Dolly is somebody that like really, this is a vital part of her origin story. And I Big think,
time. That's really, why I picked this yeah. one over Evening Shade, just because this is who she is. This,
yeah.
This incident, this, you know, and she's so altruistic now and gives back to just everybody and has been doing it for 50 years. She's been, you know, a philanthropist and all that stuff for decades. And it's just, she's just a beautiful soul.
Yeah. Yeah. We're very lucky to have her.
Yep. Absolutely. Let's hope she sticks around for a long time. We love you, Dolly. Our friend Bill says Coat of Many Colors from Dolly Parton, and it is number 10.
Number 10, Coat of Many Colors.
Back through the years, I go wandering once again. Back to the seasons of my youth. I recall a box of rags that someone gave us. And how my mama put the rags to use. There were rags of many colors, but every piece was small. And I didn't have a coat, and it was away down in the fall. Mama sewed the rags together, so in every piece we loved, she made my coat of many colors that I was so proud of. As she sewed, she told a story from the Bible she had read, about a coat of many colors Joseph wore. And then she said, perhaps this coat will bring you good luck and happiness. And I just couldn't wait to wear it, and Mama blessed it with a kiss. My coat of many colors that my mama made for me, made only from rags, but I wore it so proudly. Although we had no money, well, I was rich as I could be. In my coat of many colors my mama made for me. So with patches on my breeches and holes in both my shoes, in my coat of many colors I hurried off to school, just to find the others laughing and making fun of me. In my coat of many colors my mama made for me. And oh, I couldn't understand it, for I felt I was rich. And I told them all the love my mama sewed in every stitch. And I told them all the story mama told me while she sewed, and how my coat of many colors was worth more than all their clothes. But they didn't understand it, and I tried to make them see that one is only poor, only if they choose to be. Now I know we had no money, but I was rich as I could be. In my coat of many colors my mama made for me, made just for me.
Who's got a tissue?
Beautiful. And she's an, I was just saying to my girlfriend yesterday, she's an underrated guitar player.
Yeah. Is that her on the track there?
I don't think she's doing the lead, but the rhythm on, really? On the right,
it's
channel
perfect.
That sounded, because there's a great version, the like the first version of Do I Ever Cross Your Mind before she added the bridge, which... in my mind, I'm like, oh, the like official version, that doesn't count. That's a George Lucas revamp. The pure original version is her with Chet Atkins. It's just the two of them.
Oh my goodness.
Two guitars, and she even takes a little bit of a solo, and then you hear her giggle and be like, no, Chet, you take it.
Oh, really?
And then he just picks up.
I gotta hear that.
It's yeah. It's it, one of it. It brings me so much joy every time I hear it.
She does that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a little bit more from Song Facts. She composed the song in 1969 while traveling with Porter Wagoner on a tour bus. She explained in her 1994 memoir, My Life and Other Unfinished Business, because she could find no paper as the song came to her, she wrote it on the back of a dry cleaning receipt from one of Wagner's suits. When the song became a hit, Wagoner had the receipt framed. On the original LP of the 1975 compilation Best of Dolly Parton, the printed lyrics to the song appeared in the inner gatefold of the album, including a final verse that has never been included on any of Parton's recordings of the song. Ooh. Yeah, you ready for this?
Okay.
Yeah. Through life, I've remained happy, and good luck is on my side. I have everything that anyone could ever want from life, but nothing is as precious as my mama's memory and the coat of many colors that mama made for me.
Wow.
Mic drop.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to say mic drop. That's something.
Well, we're in an audio medium, so you have to use your words.
Yeah, it's better than actually dropping the mic.
Yeah, well, they just hear a thud.
Yeah, people don't need to hear that. Anyway, that's number 10. Jason, what's up with number 9? What do you got?
Number 9 is the Beach Boys' Brian's Back.
Oh, wow. I think I saw this, I read this somewhere. I didn't get a chance to listen. What's this
yeah,
one about?
Yeah, so 1976 is around the time that Brian Wilson first comes under the care of Dr. Eugene Landy.
You mean Paul Giamatti?
Yes, yes. Weird that Paul Giamatti's played two villains in music biopics.
Yeah, Pig Vomit was the
other. Oh, yeah.
Shout out to Howard Stern. That's great.
So he's first under Landy's care, and this is one of those cases. He actually did save Brian's life. Brian was grossly overweight, just staying in bed all day, doing drugs, eating poorly. It was a dark time for Brian. He sort of, after Smile, I feel people seem to think like, oh, Smile broke him and it was gone from there. No, he was still a very active member of the Beach Boys until like sort of Friends 2020. Carl took the lead, but Brian was still there. He's on everything. He's arranging and writing. But as we get further into the 70s, right, he really makes that retreat. So Landy comes in, helps Brian start eating better, lose a bunch of weight, feel better, get him on medication.
Okay.
And they start this Brian's Back campaign, which for somebody who has a very, very fragile sense of self and has always been uncomfortable with the term genius being lobbied at him, because that's a lot of pressure, especially you know, when you're 23, 24. And like, I agree, he is a genius.
Yes.
But when you're doing stuff and people are hailing you with Mozart, like, you don't really feel like you can fail. Like, Strawberry Fields Forever didn't hit number one. It was blocked by Engelbert Humperdinck's Release Me. And in the Beatles anthology, they talk about, no, it was a relief, like, to know that we could still be okay and still be a band, even if a record didn't hit number one. That took off a lot of pressure.
I could see that, yeah.
Brian didn't really have that opportunity because the Beatles were succeeding so strongly. And even if it wasn't about the charts, it was about the art of it all.
Right.
So hearing Sgt. Pepper, he was like, I shouldn't even try to best this. So he has his downslide, his breakdown, gets picked up. Brian's back, and they're saying, he's back in the band, he's active, we're gonna make this record. 15 Big Ones was sort of a, like, everybody thought it was Greatest Hits because of the name, but it was actually just celebrating 15 years of the Beach Boys.
Right.
And Lorne Michaels did a whole Beach Boys anniversary special.
Oh my God.
There's this amazing clip of Aykroyd and Belushi as surf cops. They bust into Brian's room and he's, you know, sleeping in bed, and he's wearing his robe. And they say, like, you haven't been surfing. We're the surf police. You're from the Beach Boys and you're not surfing. Like, we got to get you out. They drag him out to the beach in his robe and, like, throw him in the water. Brian, who's just starting to feel like a person again, but also longtime deep fear of the water.
Oh, I was going to say, he never did surf.
No, he wasn't a surfer. He barely went in his pool. Like, he was afraid of the water.
Oh, my God.
But you see him, like, you know,
hamming it up?
No, he just looks profoundly uncomfortable trying to be in this comedy sketch.
Oh,
he
man.
Was the musical guest on SNL.
Live TV. That's
live
terrifying.
TV. Yeah, and he did, I think he did Back Home.
And live TV when it was like one third of America was watching.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. And like Saturday Night Live, you know, it's two, maybe season two, I think. They're like really starting to get well known.
Wow.
Yeah, he does like Good Vibrations kind of slowly and with a raspy voice sitting in a sandbox that they made for him.
Oh my God.
So it was this whole thing, and like it stirred, like, hey, it's the Beach Boys, and Endless Summer was kind of riding high on that.
Yeah.
So it worked as a marketing campaign, but for Brian it wasn't that good, but it inspired the song Brian's Back, which Mike Love, he said about it, Brian wasn't back, but there was a time early in the campaign that I hoped Brian really was back, and there were times in the studio or even on stage when Brian would reconnect to the music and his voice would soar and he would hit the high notes as only Brian Wilson could. I would watch in amazement and get so emotional I'd have to choke back the tears. I couldn't tell him how I felt, but I wrote this song instead called Brian's Back.
He's trying.
The lyrics contain references, and this is one of my, if it's done tastefully, which is one of, I think, the hardest things to do, it works. Otherwise, putting references to other songs in your,
I've heard it done
song,
well.
Glass Onion, I will count.
Yes,
or
Glass
I Am the Walrus,
perfect.
Because that was like the bit in kind of an antagonistic way. Yeah. It wasn't being like, hey, remember all these songs we're known for? It was more like grappling with the legend. But it seems like Ringo has at least two songs per record that do this exact thing. Well, and it's been going on since
the 90s. Well, then maybe it's not that great.
He's got one that I was...
Because I like Ringo, but, you know...
Oh, I love Ringo.
His stuff is tough to take in large doses.
I try to see him whenever he comes to the Greek.
Oh, I've got to go to that show. Shannon went
He's, what, 83, and he comes running out, and he's dancing, and he sings great, and he still plays drums great.
Yeah.
But, great. You know, he'll do a...
W Ringo.
He'll do, you know... Every so often he'll throw in a new song, and he had the single Postcards from Paradise, and there are almost no words that aren't song titles. And I was like so mad, and then I looked up, like, did Ringo write this? And he wrote it with Todd Rundgren, which made me even madder, because that guy is also a genius.
Right.
And he was responsible for this. But I digress. Funny. Brian's back. I just want to point out that the first verse is very kind of broad and general. It's not using I or we or you. It's just, you know, reminiscing on the old days. But then the second verse pivots to Mike Love's point of view and Mike Love's experiences in the tribute song he wrote to Brian called Brian's Back. So it really is the whole song, except for the first verse, is entirely from Mike Love's point of view and experiences. And it's corny.
Can't help
and
himself.
I
love it.
I hate this song.
Why are we listening? All right, let me judge for myself. I definitely am curious about this now. And let's listen to Brian's Back from the Beach Boys, number 9.
Number 9, Brian's Back.
Teenage gamblers sitting in a rambler, listening to the radio, and then standing in the grandstands, following the game plan, watching life's plays unfold. You fell in love with the pretty cheerleader. I even made City now, coming up with fun, fun, fun.
Fun, fun. You'd have to say we got around.
I just couldn't take anymore. Of course he had to say I get around at the end. Man.
Yeah, we got
Mike. What? Mike.
Salt Lake City, fun, fun, fun. good vibrations, pet sounds.
Yeah, an old pet sound. I get around.
And not counting the fact that, you know, the song title of this song, like, that doesn't count. That's just how songs work.
Wow. We normally have episodes that we set aside once a year to do songs that we don't like. We do it once a year. That's...
And it's, I will say, as far
not,
as the,
it was not good.
The autobiographical element too.
Oh, it's that, autobiographical. I'll give you.
Well,
that.
But no, well, not just that. That, you know, a lot of them are just sort of like it. You know, the autobiography gets to, you know, it stops at sort of the point where they made it. Maybe, like they started, like they found success. That this actually like goes like, hey, remember the early days, but still bringing it into what was a very contemporary campaign.
Yeah, it's brutal. How he kept inserting himself in Brian's story.
Yeah, I married a cheerleader, guys. Don't forget that.
Yeah. But by the way, you know, I married a cheerleader. Love you, Mike. Let's go to number 8. And in 1973, Mott the Hoople released their second album called Mott, following the runaway success of All the Young Dudes. The lead single was a song called All the Way from Memphis. And the song has some autobiographical stuff going on. It documents a true life story of something that happened to guitarist Mick Ralphs. He sings, forgot my sixth string razor, hit the sky halfway to Memphis before I realized. Well, I rang the information, my axe was cold. They said she rides the train to Orioles. So apparently on tour, Mick Ralphs lost his guitar, and it ended up in Baltimore, and he didn't get it back for a month.
You got it back, though.
You got it back, yeah. This incident was revisited again in the song that ended up as the B-side to All the Way from Memphis, The Ballad of Mott.
Ah.
Yep. This song is basically an origin story and a tale about the majesty and tragedy of being in a working rock and roll band. This is basically AC/DC's It's a Long Way to the Top, but with actual autobiographical information included.
Facts.
That's right. So there's one verse where they give, tell you everyone's name in the band. Buffin lost his childlike dreams. That's drummer Dale Buffin Griffin. And Mick lost his guitar. Mick Ralphs, again, the lost guitar. He says, and Verdon grew a line or two. And that's a reference to departed keyboardist Verdon Allen. And then it says, and Overend's just a rock and roll star. And that's bassist Pete Overend Watts. And they're telling the tale of the band and how it was hard to get here. But now we're at the top, and it's kind of lonely at the top. Something like that. So let's check it out at number 8 with Mott the Hoople, everybody.
Number 8. The Ballad of Mott.
I changed my name in search of fame to find the touch. Oh, I wish I'd never wanted then what I want now, twice as much. We crossed the mighty oceans and we had a few divides, but we never crossed emotion, for we felt too much inside. Somehow we let you down. We went off somewhere on the way, and now I see we have to pay the rock and roll circus is in town.
his childlike dreams, and Mick lost his guitar, and Bird and Gray line it too, and Overend's just a rock and roll star. Behind these shades, the visions fade as I learn a thing or two. Oh, but if I had my time again, you all know just what I'd do. The sights and for the sound. We were out somewhere on the way, and now I see we have to pay. The rock and roll circus is in town.
Hunter didn't sing a verse about himself, but you know, you got the idea. Yeah. He's, you know, telling his tale as well.
It's a more melancholy, far more melancholy look at that than AC/DC's.
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. But yeah. It's kind of coming from the same vibe where it's just like, we made it.
Yeah, it's a little. It's worn out without the same kind of anger.
That's right.
No, it's not. It's nice. It's you know, more of like an Almost Famous type approach.
Should have been used in the movie, I think. So the Ballad of Mata Hoople is also the name of a documentary about the band, which I'm definitely gonna have to find, track it down somewhere. Here's a description, according to Start Productions. The Ballad of Mata Hoople tells the story of one of the UK's most cherished bands, Mata Hoople, from their origins in 1960s Hereford, discovery and guidance from Island Records' Guy Stevens, to their David Bowie-inspired resurrection. The Ballad of Mata Hoople features interviews and recollections from Ian Hunter, Mick Ralphs, Vernon Ellen, Dale Buffin Griffin, Ariel Bender, and Morgan Fisher, as well as further observations from fan club president Chris Needs, teenage fan The Clash's Mick Jones, and Roger Taylor from Queen.
Wow.
I'm going to see that.
Yeah, no, that's the, I mean, the, you know, the, those kinds of names to look, to see all in support of a band like Mata Hoople that is so good and so underrated, because everybody knows like all the young dudes,
right?
And that's for a lot of people, that's about it. So when you kind of see all those other names that you might know way more, you know, it's like the Sparks Brothers documentary.
Yeah.
Seeing like all of these heavy hit, with Jack Antonoff being like, all pop music is just rearranged Sparks. It's like, oh well, all right, we should take this seriously.
Yeah, I like that. Yep. Everyone, go check that out wherever you can find it. Let's go to number 7.
All right.
Jason Burke.
Number 7, I went for something that's a little bit of a Life on the Road song, but does feel very specific to that band. It is Truckin' by the Grateful Dead. Because it is about very real circumstances. Robert Hunter wrote the lyrics just being, you know, technically Robert Hunter is a member of the Grateful Dead, but he was a non-performing member. He would just write the lyrics.
That's cool. You know, Cream had someone like that.
Yeah, they had Felix Pappalardi and Peter Brown were like the lyrics guys for Cream.
I want to do an episode about that. Top 10 rock and roll lyricists.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they don't do anything else like Hal David. You know, because it's rock and roll, it could mean anything.
But yeah. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, Hal David is one of those.
Yeah, Bernie Taupin. Bernie. You know, he's not, I mean, he might do appearances, but you don't go like, oh, I'm going to see the Bernie Taupin show tonight.
Yeah.
Let's look for that. A future episode. But yeah, Robert Hunter wrote, especially inspired by January 31st, 1970, a big drug bust in New Orleans when the Dead was doing a string of shows with Fleetwood Mac as the opening act. And 1970 Fleetwood Mac is like, I think Peter Green was gone by then.
Is it Bob Welch?
I don't know. I don't know if Bob Welch was there yet. But it was that sort of in between, like coming out of being a blues band, kind of into a pop band, but still, you know, 5 years before Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks.
Right.
But it's, you know, it pretty quickly became one of the most performed songs by the Grateful Dead.
Yeah. What are the specific lyrics that we're looking for?
So the specific lyrics,
because I always knew this song, I just never thought about the lyrics.
Yes, so the it's mostly the chorus. Dallas got a soft machine, which is not a reference to the British band Soft Machine. It was just a reference to the vibes in Dallas. Houston, too close to New Orleans, where the drug bust happened. New York has got the ways and means, but it won't let you be, like, it's too much of a hassle. Busted down on Bourbon Street, set up like a bowling pin, knocked down, it gets to wearing thin, they just won't let you be.
Wow.
And it's definitely got classic Dead things like reference to cards and really any kind of gambling. Casey Jones is like the train song. I guess because the song is called Truck and there's no train reference. My brother does have a shirt that he wears to Dead shows. It says, John Mayer sings about trains, tour 2021. it's the places they'd been, the characters that they'd seen. There's an amazing website that's part of the UC Santa Cruz archives. It's called The Annotated Grateful Dead, and it has the lyrics to every song and what specific references are.
Oh, wow.
And it's not just how specific they are to the Dead, but what they are. What does truckin' mean? Well, truckin' was a popular dance step, and the word is immortalized in a number of 20s and 30s songs. Who is the Doodah Man? A Doodah Man is a character from Camp Town Races.
God. So it's just like every line is analyzed.
Yes. Now, what I had heard, and weirdly, I'm not seeing it here, but I still do believe this is true. I think this is the internet playing a prank on me and trying to gaslight me. But I recall the story behind Truckin' being that as the band continued, they would add new verses based on more of their experiences.
Oh, yeah?
So it was also originally the thought would be, you know, every year or two would be this living document.
Oh, that's so cool. Did they actually do that?
They did not. I swear, and I looked, I swear that there was an additional verse or an additional chorus, and I can't find it, but I don't know if they were going to get rid of earlier verses and just sort of cycle them out like members of Menudo, or if it was just gonna, you know, several years. Because the other thing is, even in its current state as a live song, it could be, you know, 10 minutes because they're jamming. Now imagine adding another 9-10 verses and still jamming the same amount.
To do. Yeah.
Oh, they easily could.
Yeah.
But it's. I mean, they've done. They used to do Dylan's "Stuck Inside of Mobile" with the Memphis Blues again, and that's like 11 full verses.
Right.
But this, knowing the Dead as well as I do, this to me always reads like these are the experiences of the Grateful Dead, and it isn't just like, hey, if you want to be in a rock band, you might be in a shitty hotel.
Man, you're like going after Dan now. Every time that comes up, it's a slap in the face to Dan Rothschild.
Love you, Dan.
We do. All right, let's listen to Truckin'. Great pick at number 7.
Number 7, Truckin'.
Truckin'. Got my chips cashed in, keep trucking like the Doodah Man. Together, more or less in line, just keep trucking on.
marquees out on Main Street. Chicago, New York, Detroit, and it's all on the same street. A typical city involved in a typical daydream. Hang it up and see what tomorrow brings.
Dallas got a soft machine. Houston, too close to New Orleans. New York got the ways and means and just won't let you be.
Most of the cats that you meet on the streets speak of true love. Most of the time they're sitting and crying at home. One of these days they know they gotta get going. Out of the door and down to the street all alone.
Chugging like the doo-dah man once told me you got to pay your hand. Sometimes the cards ain't worth a dime if you don't lay them down.
She isn't the same. Living on Reds, vitamin C, and cocaine. All a friend can say is ain't it a shame.
Trucking up to Buffalo and thinking you got to mellow slow. It takes time to pick a place to go. Just keep trucking on home.
Staring out of the hotel window. Got a tip, they're gonna kick the door in again. I'd like to get some sleep before I travel, but if you got a warrant, I guess you're gonna come in.
Busted down on Bourbon Street. Sit up like a falling pin. Knocked down, it gets to wearing thin. It just won't let you be.
Long strange trip it's been.
They'd been together only 4 years when, you know, yeah, coming out with this song.
But
this
they were
song.
Living as the Grateful Dead. That's a lot of living.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I saw, you know, the Dead & Company quote-unquote final tour last year, and it ended with three nights at Oracle Park in San Francisco. Hometown shows sold out. I was there all three nights.
Yes,
and
you were.
And it was the final night where the first song of the encore was Truckin', and you know that after 8 years of Dead & Company,
right?
Just the original 30 years of the Grateful Dead, the other ones, the Dead, all these, you know, Phil and Friends, all these offshoots to, you know, say, hey, this is the end of another chapter of this.
Wow.
And, you know, to when they said, what a long, strange trip it's been, then that was, you know, me and 45,000 other people like, yeah, yeah.
See, that's a long time. Now that's a long time.
Yeah. I mean, next year is 60 years of the Grateful Dead.
That's wow.
Dead & Company just, you know, they announced 24 shows at the Sphere. I'm gonna be at one of them.
Oh my god.
I'm on the bus for life.
Oh my god. All right. Good luck with that. I don't know if I could handle a show like that at the Sphere.
I'll take Dramamine.
That's great. All right, let's go to number 6. And we gotta talk about Bo Diddley.
Ooh.
Steel? Oh no.
No,
Steel,
no,
like
no,
I
no,
took,
no,
took
no,
one
no,
of
no.
yours. I was wondering.
No. Just I'm happy to talk about Bo Diddley.
Yeah. So Bo Diddley was the talent, the show, and the hype man all rolled into one. He was one of the originators of rock and roll, of course, and he knew he was because he sang about it a lot. Just like Muddy Waters and others of the genre, they just love to sing about themselves. And he's got an autobiographical song simply called The Story of Bo Diddley. And that's coming in at number six. First of all, this is the first ever use of the Bo Diddley beat, if you can believe it.
So he was writing about himself using his iconic thing.
Yep.
But he had not yet done the thing that made it's. Well, it's, you know, you think of George Harrison and his iconic slide, and that was
right
after the Beatles, which is the thing he's best known for.
That is true.
So if Bo Diddley was able to invent rock and roll without the Bo Diddley beat, I didn't realize that. I'm even more impressed.
I know, right? This for those who don't know the Bo Diddley beat, it's pretty simple. It's just, you've heard it in like
I Want Candy,
right?
Not, Who Do You Love?
Not Fade Away from Buddy Holly, Magic Bus, New York Groove has it, Faith from George Michael.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Bo Diddley invented that, and this is the first iteration of that. And this track we're going to hear, this is his first formal session for Leonard Chess in 1955, March 2nd, 1955. So this is like the beginning of everything. And
his first session with Chess.
Yeah.
And he's right. He's like, by the way, this is my legend.
Right.
The cojones on this guy. I love it.
Oh, wait till you hear what he says about himself. He says he's a mess, by the way. I'm a mess. So here's he relating the story of how he began performing and people were coming from miles around to go see him. He says, early in the middle of the night, a car drove up with four headlights. Now a man stepped out with a big, long cigar. He said, sign this line and I can make you a star. I said, now what's in it, man? What's in it for me? He says, play your guitar, son, and wait and see. And here he is, Mr. Bo Diddley, doing a little bit of the story of Bo Diddley. One of many songs. He actually has another song called just Bo Diddley.
Right,
yeah. It's hilarious. I love it. This is number six.
Number six. The Story of Bo Diddley.
I was born one night about 12 o'clock. I come in this world playing a gold guitar. Papa walk around sticking out his chest. Holla, mama, this boy, he gonna be a mess. Yeah. Oh. Now people came from miles around. And just to hear my little guitar sound. If I keep on practice, I'd be famous one day. Woo, I'm a mess. I'm a killer dealer. Uh-huh. Car drove up with four headlights. Now a man stepped out with a long cigar. He said, sign this line, I can make you a star. I said, so what's in it, man? What's in it for me? He said, I play your guitar, son, and wait and see. Here I am. Girls like me. They say it's crazy.
Girls like me. They say it's crazy. Sound nice. I love that. He said, girls like me. They say I'm crazy.
They say I'm crazy.
Okay, so that was definitely not the Bo Diddley beat.
No, that, and I was even trying to think, like, is it slowed down, but it didn't kind of have that triplet thing.
This is the Bo Diddley beat. This is the song called Bo Diddley. Let's listen to just a little bit of this.
Baby, diamond ring. If that diamond ring don't shine, he gonna take it to a private eye.
I mean, that's not quite it.
The drums are doing it. The guitar is playing like opposite the drums for some cool syncopated stuff. So the drums are doing the boom, 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 but the guitar's doing like it's kind of being a little more more rhythmic. But you can at least distill that down. Yeah. You could easily sing Not Fade Away or I Want Candy over that.
Yeah. But I think we've figured out that all that stuff I was saying about the Bo Diddley beat, that was the song Bo Diddley, not the story of Bo Diddley.
Even so, I'm still impressed that he, started his career on Chess being like, I'm the greatest. Y'all know me.
Yes, the ladies like me. Was like, girls like me. Shout out to the Animals, who do their own version of the story of Bo Diddley. Eric Burdon in that version tells a long story about the history of rock and roll and Bo Diddley with much deeper historical details. It really gets into the history of rock, and they talk about Bo's music having an impact on the British invasion bands and stuff. And the story ends like this. He says, now we've been doing this number Bo Diddley for quite some time now. Bo Diddley visited this country last year, and we were playing down at the Club of Go-Go in Newcastle, our hometown. The doors opened one night, and to our surprise, walked in the man himself, Bo Diddley. Along with him was Jerome Green, his Maraca man, and the Duchess, his gorgeous sister. And as we were doing this number, along with them came the Rolling Stones, the Mercy Beats. They're all standing around digging it, and I overheard Bo Diddley talking. He turned it around to Jerome Green, and he said, hey, Jerome, what do you think of these guys doing our material? Jerome said, where's the bar, man? Please show me to the bar. He turned around to the Duchess. He said, hey, Duchess, what do you think of these young guys doing our material? She said, I don't know. I only came across here to see the changing of the guards and all that jazz. Well, Bo Diddley looked up and he said to me, with half-closed eyes and a smile, he said, man, took off his glasses. He said, man, and he says it like this, that sure is the biggest load of rubbish I ever heard in my life. And then they go,
savage.
Oh, Bo Diddley, yeah, Bo Diddley. So, yeah. Check out that version by the Animals if you haven't heard it. It's really fun. That is number 6. And that means we are at the halfway point.
Ooh.
Which means it's time to take a break and come back next week. So, you can go home and come back next week. Yeah, we'll work it out. But yeah, I'm actually letting my guest go home for the week now. It used to be they have to stay here for a week. But you can come back next week and we'll continue with part 2.
Yeah, I'll do some tidying up.
Yeah. And everyone at home, you can hear that next week. So this is it for part 1. We do have one more thing to do and play, and that is to play the bonus track of the week for part 1. This is the song that all of our friends over there on social media voted on. And check it out. We'll be back next week with part 2. Thanks everyone for listening. And until next week, peace out.
As chosen by our listeners on social media, here's the bonus track of the week.
Hey everybody, it's time for the listener pick bonus track of the week, selected by our friends on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. We had such a great time hanging with our friend Jason Burke. Thank you, Jason. Great job co-hosting as always, and we'll be back next week with part 2 and picks 5 through 1, but right now it is the bonus track. This is the song selected by you guys over there on the social medias, and these were the songs you guys were voting on. We had Them with The Story of Them. We had Neil Diamond with Brooklyn Roads. We had Mama Tried by Merle Haggard. But the winner in an absolute landslide blew away the competition, it's Loretta Lynn. It's Coal Miner's Daughter. the title of the biopic about her as well, starring Sissy Spacek. Great movie if you haven't seen it. Lee Von Helm plays her father. Beverly D'Angelo plays Patsy Cline. It's amazing. So check it out. But the title track of that movie is the story of Loretta Lynn, written by Loretta Lynn and sung by Loretta Lynn. So check it out. Thank you so much to our friend Nick, who suggested Coal Miner's Daughter, and it is the bonus track of the week for part one. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week with part two. And until next time, peace out.
Listener pick.
We were poor, but we had love. That's the one thing that Daddy made sure of. He shoveled coal to make a poor man's dollar. My Daddy worked all night in the Van Leer coal mines. All day long in the field hoeing corn. Mommy rocked the babies at night and read the Bible by the coal oil light. And everything would start all over come break of morn. Daddy loved and raised their kids on a miner's pay. Mommy scrubbed our clothes on a washboard every day. The money somewhere.